If you've been watching the financial news at all, you probably saw the headline that made just about everyone stop what they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
Gold prices surging past $4,200 an ounce in late 2025.
Oh,
I mean, that's not just a bump. That's basically the entire system's warning light just flashing bright red.
It really is a huge signal.
So our mission in this deep dive is to figure out what's really driving this. But, you know, more importantly, we're looking at how these escalating U.S. fiscal uncertainties are forcing a fundamental and kind of painful rethink of the investment strategies we all use to just take for granted.
Right.
It really feels like the old playbook is failing. Okay, so let's unpack this.
And that rethink is, it's absolutely essential right now. Yeah. Because that classic safety net, the 60-40 equities to bonds model that everyone from, you know, retirees to pension funds relied on, it's eroding fundamentally.
The bedrock of portfolio construction for decades.
For decades. And WisdomTree research has been really clear on this. The core conditions that made 60-40 work like low inflation and assets moving in opposite direction.
A negative correlation.
That negative correlation, exactly. Those conditions just haven't reliably shown up since all that volatility back in 2022. The whole safety mechanism kind of broke, and that broken link is really the core problem we have to get our heads around today.
And it seems like the root cause of this malfunction is the state of the U.S. balance sheet. I mean, we talk about debt ceilings and spending, but let's quantify it. What is the scale of the fiscal landscape that's causing all this instability?
We're talking about massive structural numbers. In fiscal year 2025, the U.S. recorded a deficit of, wait for it, $1.78 trillion.
A trillion. It's a number that's almost hard to conceptualize.
It really is. And to put it in context, that translates to 5.9% of GDP.
5.9%. I mean, that's way beyond what most economists would call sustainable, especially when we're not in a deep recession or some massive war. So what does a deficit that big actually mean for the average investor?
It means higher interest payments are just eating up a bigger and bigger piece of the budget. It squeezes out productive spending in the future. It means the Treasury is under constant pressure to issue new debt, which, you know, drives up supply and challenges that whole idea of safe assets being scarce.
Yeah.
It basically just raises the long-term tax burden on future growth. So this deficit isn't just a number on a page anymore. It's become the background hum of systemic risk in the market.
And what's so fascinating here is the internal fight creating that number.
Yeah.
You have these two forces pushing against each other.
That's a great way to put it. On one side, you had these measures to boost revenue, right? Like the tariffs from the Trump administration. They brought in a significant amount, something like $202 billion.
Which is a huge jump year over year.
A massive jump, yeah, 142%. But that extra revenue was just immediately swallowed up by these enormous spending pressures from tax rebates, corporate incentives.
So it's a fiscal treadmill, basically.
Yeah.
Running so fast that even a huge injection of cash can't help you catch up.
Exactly. It's like trying to fill a bucket that has a massive hole in the bottom. And investors really felt the sharp end of this recently.
You're talking about the shutdown.
The shutdown and that $284 billion deficit in October alone. That combination just poured gasoline on all the concerns about fiscal sustainability. I mean, when Congress can't even agree to keep the lights on, the perceived safety of their debt just poof. Evaporates.
And that instability, that brinkmanship, that's the noise that's making these supposedly safe investments feel so shaky.
It is.
Okay, so let's pivot to the other half of that failing 60-40 equation then, the bond market. For decades, the biggest knock against gold was always the no yield argument, right? Why hold a lump of metal when you can get safe, guaranteed income from U.S. government debt?
It was a very compelling argument for a very long time. It thrived because, well, government debt was seen as the bedrock of safety, and what central banks were going to do was relatively predictable.
But not anymore.
Not anymore. That's the legacy mindset we really have to break away from. By late 2025, what we're seeing are yields that are volatile, they're unpredictable, and they're tied directly to what analysts are politely calling policy improvisation.
Okay, stop there. What does policy improvisation actually mean in the real world?
It's the market just reacting to sudden, unpredictable shifts. It could be fiscal policy, like an unexpected spending bill or a budget crisis, or it could be the central bank changing its guidance without any long-term clarity.
So the rules of the game just keep changing.
Constantly. And when that happens, you can't reliably predict your income from a bond. That volatility just crushes the clarity of opportunity costs. So investors are forced to start chasing, you know, a few extra basis points of yield, and they have to start weighing these much bigger, broader systemic risks.
Which brings us to the technical side.
Right. And here's where the real pain comes in for bonds. They've been confronted with a huge increase in duration risk.
Duration risk is a term we hear a lot. Can you just break that down in simple terms for us? What does that mean for treasuries right now?
Sure. It just means the longer you have until a bond matures, the more its price is going to swing when interest rates change. And when rates are as volatile as they are now, thanks to that policy improvisation,
the value of those long-term bonds swings wildly.
Wildly. The asset that's supposed to be safe suddenly becomes a high-risk, volatile trade.
And there's data to back this up, right? This isn't just a feeling.
Oh, absolutely. We have concrete data. Foreign investors, who are massive holders of U.S. debt, have been actively diversifying their reserves. They're shifting away from treasuries and, you guessed it, moving toward gold.
So it's a direct vote of no confidence.
It's a direct reflection of waning confidence in the reliability of that debt. And this is happening even while 10-year yields were hovering near 4.1%, which seems like an attractive return. But the perceived risk of the issuer is starting to overshadow the yield being offered.
And that shutdown chaos really put a spotlight on this. It just proved that bonds can't be counted on to counter a stock market downturn anymore.
Exactly. The whole premise of 60/40 is that when stocks zig, bonds zag, and your capital is preserved. But when a political panic sends both stocks and bonds zigzagging all over the place, the whole strategy just implodes.
So this is where it gets a little strange. Despite all this, the fiscal fears, the bond market chaos U.S. equities actually posted pretty solid gains in 2025. On the surface, it looks like stocks are saving the day, right? But what was actually driving those gains?
Yeah, that's the paradox. Those solid headline gains were overwhelmingly propelled by just a handful of technology companies.
The AI momentum.
On the massive AI momentum and speculation, we're talking about a highly concentrated market, which is in itself a huge risk factor.
So if you look beneath that shiny surface,
you find real fragility. I mean, look at the broader economy. Consumer sentiment was soft, industrial data was all over the place, small cap stocks were barely even participating. It was really an AI-powered facade hiding some serious vulnerability in the rest of the economy.
And analysts are already pointing to the headwinds for 2026.
They are. I mean, think about it. If inflation comes roaring back, which all this deficit spending could certainly fuel, or if oil prices spike, or if there's any kind of disruption to that very concentrated tech leadership,
those 2025 gains could just evaporate.
They could become extremely volatile very, very quickly. It's a market that's built on just a few pillars, and if one of those cracks, the whole thing could tilt.
Okay, so if bonds aren't the reliable hedge anymore, and equities are standing on a few narrow pillars, what is gold becoming in this new world? This is where the data gets really fascinating, because its actual behavior is changing.
This is the critical point. In 2025, gold exhibited a really crucial shift. It moved to a mildly positive correlation with yields.
Okay, let's just pause on that. That's the opposite of how it's supposed to work.
It's the complete opposite. Historically, gold hated rising yields because suddenly bonds offered real competition. Now we're seeing them move together. It's reframing gold's entire identity in the market.
So that old argument, you can't hold gold when yields are high, is basically dead.
It's dead. What this implies is that gold isn't just a traditional, you know, rate-sensitive trade anymore. It is now functioning much more as a fiscal stress indicator. It's reacting to the stability or the lack of stability of the financial system itself, not just the cost of borrowing money.
And there's a technical indicator that proves this out, isn't there?
There is, and it's maybe the most telling piece of evidence we have. Gold has started closely tracking treasury swap spreads.
All right, that's some dense financial jargon. Break that down for us. What's a treasury swap spread, and why should we care that gold is following it?
Okay, so a treasury swap spread measures the difference between the yield on a government bond and the cost of insuring against risk-like default or counterparty risk in the swap market. When that spread gets wider or more volatile, it's a signal. It means the market is demanding a higher price to hedge against U.S. systemic financial risk.
Got it.
So the fact that gold is tracking that spread means investors are literally using gold as direct insurance against perceived instability in the U.S. Treasury system itself.
So gold has become less of an inflation hedge and more of a confidence barometer for the U.S. balance sheet.
That's the perfect way to put it. And you see this new role supported by multiple drivers pushing prices above that $4,000 mark. Geopolitical tensions are a factor, dollar fluctuations, sure. But the critical long-term driver is these persistent worries about the deficit. The data is clear. Those high anxiety periods, like the shutdowns, were key triggers for safe haven demand for gold.
And it wasn't just private investors. We saw this from governments, too.
On a massive scale, central banks around the world bought a staggering 53 tons of gold in October alone. That is significant, sustained buying, and it supported prices even while yields were firming up. They're hedging their own sovereign risk against the dollar system.
Which brings us full circle back to the failure of the 60-40 strategy.
Yeah.
If it's struggling, what are the big institutional studies proposing as a solution?
They're scrambling to find real ballast for portfolios. The new frameworks are all designed to restore that lost diversification. We're seeing a lot of talk about the efficient core approach.
Okay. What's that?
It involves layering your equities and bonds, but, and this is the crucial part, adding a dedicated sleeve of diversifiers into the mix, things that behave differently from both stocks and government debt.
And what kind of assets fall into that diversifier category?
It can include things like certain hedge fund strategies, but increasingly it's about real assets, assets that react directly to inflation or this kind of systemic uncertainty.
And I've seen a more specific model being talked about, the 60-20-20 framework.
Yes. That's a more explicit version. It allocates 60% to equities, 20% to bonds, and then a full 20% to real assets. And the whole point of that 20% is to respond directly to the counterparty risks you get in these policy-driven markets. When policymakers are just improvising, you want something tangible.
So what are we talking about when we say real assets, besides gold, obviously?
Beyond gold, that category includes things like commodities, infrastructure investments, and certain types of real estate, especially those with leases that are linked to inflation. They provide income that adjusts, and critically, they are not a liability issued by a fiscally strained government.
It's about finding safety outside the traditional financial system. And the source material had a really surprising example of how to do this efficiently.
It did, the wisdom tree models. They showed that you could pair a heavy, say, 90% allocation to equities with a dedicated gold futures overlay. And historically, that acted as a much cheaper and more reliable hedge than long-dated treasuries are right now.
So you don't necessarily need that huge 40% bond allocation to get stability anymore.
Exactly. You can use modern tools to replace that lost ballast, but you have to be very intentional about which asset you're choosing to do that job.
Okay, so let's tie this all together. What's the core takeaway here?
The core takeaway is that fiscal dynamics, especially these huge structural U.S. deficits, have just profoundly reshaped how all assets relate to each other. This uncertainty is driving yield behavior, it's driving investor allocations, and crucially, gold has stopped being a simple rate play. It's now responding directly to debt sustainability and acting as a global confidence barometer.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Well, the evidence suggests that the assumptions that defined financial stability for decades, that government debt is the safest asset that will perfectly hedge stock risk, those are changing rapidly. That $4,200 gold price is a clear signal that we've entered a new phase, and it requires new ways of thinking about where you find the balance for your portfolio. The old safety blanket is looking pretty threadbare.
And that leads to a really important question for you to think about. If foreign investors and, you know, major central banks are actively diversifying away from treasuries toward gold because of waning confidence, what long-term systemic changes might we see in global reserves if these U.S. fiscal concerns don't go away?
Right.
If the dollar's role as the undisputed global reserve currency starts to face real competition, that trend could have consequences that go far, far beyond your personal portfolio. This raises an important question.
Absolutely. The need for smart, intentional diversification has never been clearer or more urgent. Keep digging into these details, and we'll be here for the next deep dive.